Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Adam White is always safe on the road. In fact, there's no safer man on the planet than Adam White. He's back ready to the roll on a Wednesday morning. Good morning, Whitey.
Good morning. Well, there was plenty of precipitation around yesterday, which caused a lot of these accidents.
That's correct.
10.2 mils in the city gauge over the last 24 hours.
Is that right?
Which is, that's healthy. That's good. That's good.
Is it too much for the TikTok?
No, it's going along very nicely. Very nicely. So, yes. How was last night?
Last night was good. Last night was good. At the W Awards, I took my beautiful daughter, who was ready for award season, to her blue carpet debut last night. She got a second wear out of her formal dress, which was great for me because I paid too much money for it. and she, you know what it was? You talk about your proud dad moments with your kids. It's been a while since I've had one with my kids. But I had one last night. She's 16 and she's sitting at the big table with the president of Carlton, Michael Giudice, and his wife Ellie, Kane Little and his wife Hayley, the heavy hitters, and then key sponsors of the Carlton Women's Program. And she's there and she's waxing lyrical and she's cracking gags and she's getting amongst it. And I thought, good on you. Good on you. It would be easy to just sit there and just say nothing and just watch it all unfold. But she threw herself into it, and I thought, good for you, young lady. You're going to go places.
That's no surprise, because she has. She is certainly ahead of her age in the way she conducts herself.
She's a mother's daughter. It was good. It was a good night. It was nice to catch up with some people you don't get a chance to see through the season that I've come across through my time in women's footy now for 4 years. It was good.
How many times was she asked, do you play football? And are you going to be? Are you going to be an AFLW player when you grow up?
She did get a few times, but she was very quick to shut that down. She says, "No, I'm a cheerleader. I do cheerleading," and then explain that whole cheerleading thing. We had 5 or 6 conversations about that. But it was good. She had a good time, and the guests were very good to her, and the night was a good night. We had a great result. Split the diff between Cara Bowers and Bree Davey. They were the two best players for the year. So the umpires got it right. Last night. In fact, you go through the results of the medal. And it was interesting. We talk about these the next generation of young talent, and we know Matty Prasparkas won it last year from the Blues, which was pretty cool. But you go through the top five, and a lot of them were the established marquee players back in 2016. The marquee signings prior to the competition even really forming. Bree was one of those. Ciara Bowers was one of those. Karen Paxman finished in third. Third. And then you got Ellie Blackburn as well, original player from the Bulldogs. So four of the top five were the stalwarts, so to speak, of the competition. We keep talking about these young kids, but the ones who have been around for a little while now have worked out what they need to do and how to challenge them, and they're coming with a rush.
I did notice that, because I remember saying to you, it might not have been this year, but last year, that it felt that the established marquee players were being left behind a little bit by the young players coming through that have had the, not a stronger foundation, but a different foundation with the skill set that they've got. And it was almost like they got jolted into gear, that they sort of thought, well, geez, if we're going to have to catch up here, maybe we might have to work a little bit harder.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's what's happened. Maybe that's what, but we got the right result last night. Brew and Ciara were the standouts for the year, and got the due recognition last night as joint winners of the 2021 AFLW Best and Fairest.
I mean, it was a significant night also from the fact, if you think of last year when your girl Maddie Prasparkas won, that she was awarded the prize in her backyard, like, you know.
From her sister.
It's significant that everyone could actually be back together and there was that sense of normality. Fortunately, the season played out pretty much normally. There was a few sort of hairy moments there early on in the season, but generally speaking, it was a fairly normal season for them.
Yeah.
And for you.
Well, just to get through was good after 2020. 2021 was good. So it was a good night last night, and we're going to chat to Craig Starcevic about his premiership glory on Saturday, a little bit later on this morning. We haven't been able to get access to one of the girls. I mean, Ciara's probably still in bed or hasn't yet gone to over in Perth. What is it, 4:12 a.m. in Perth? and Bree's probably still celebrating as well. So we'll do what we can about that, but it was a great night last night.
Just one final one on it, just with Bree Davey. You obviously know her very well, having coached her at Collingwood and then at Carlton.
Yep.
Just the significance of her winning, not so much her winning, but just the significance of her story. She talked about it last night, but someone that wanted to play football, but there was no professional pathway for her at all. Then she becomes an Australian Matildas goalkeeper and then can come back to football later in life. I think he's a fairly strong representation of how far forward the sport has come.
Oh, there's no doubt. There's no doubt the visibility of it, the opportunity has created enormous opportunity for players who, or people, athletes who love the game but could never play it because it stopped at 14 or whatever it was. But they come back to it because, as you well know, and I well know, and a lot of our listeners would I assume, agree, we think it's the greatest game on the planet. And if you love it, you want to play it. But if you can't, if that's been taken away because the opportunity is just not there, then you go elsewhere and you go and do your thing like Bree's done and a lot of other athletes have done. But once it was, and this they talked about this a lot last night, once it was shown that this was going to be a viable proposition and has been able to stand up to the rigours of scrutiny and organisation and publicity and all that sort of stuff, it's a legitimate league. They're coming from the trees to be a part of it. It's the AFL is the biggest business in sport in the nation. It's the best game in the country, possibly the planet.
Wow.
I think it is. I'm allowed to say that because I think it is. And you can get half a living out of it. Like, it's a pretty good result. At this stage of its evolution, 5 years in, it's an amazing story. The whole thing.
Oh, it is, absolutely. And I've said this before. I remember being part of the first game between Melbourne and the Bulldogs at the MCG, and even the most optimistic, and Daisy Pierce falls into that category, wouldn't have dreamt that it's where it is now compared to where it was back yep. 5 or 6 years ago. I mean, it's extraordinary. Because, you know, they had dreamt that this day might happen, but they didn't really think it was realistic. And largely because they didn't think they had the support from the AFL to make it happen. And I do think that Gil McLaughlin's got to be given a lot of credit for what he was prepared to do to give it a chance. I think that's, it's not lost, but it can't be forgotten. Because I think he really championed it. And I think he was surprised, even in that first game, because I remember really clearly going, he went down into the rooms when, I stand to be corrected here, but I think Melbourne won. And they went down and they sang the song like the men would do it. And, you know, he just couldn't believe how passionate they were about it all and how, you know, they had this thing inside them, this drive that they wanted to make this competition. And I think he saw it, and it was really raw. And he said, "Right, okay, we've got to try and find a way to make this happen." And that was, it's almost like that was that moment.
Well, and pulled the trigger 3 years early too.
He did because
it was supposed to be 2020.
Yeah,
it was supposed to be the first year of it, but 2017 became the one, and that first game they'll never stop talking about at Icon Park, a sellout, a lockout, if you will, in that, and it's been onward and upward ever since. So it is a great story in Australian sport, and it's evolving every year and every game. You know, it's quite remarkable what's happened to the game. So, yep, it was good. It's a good thing. It was a nice way to sign off on 2021. Now we all move towards 2022. I think it's all over now. It's got a best of fairest on Friday night, and that's just about done.
You can get some sleep.
Get some sleep, although I'd be home a bit later last night than perhaps I would have liked.
Right.
I did promise Abby's dad I'd have her home by midnight.
Otherwise she'd turn into a pumpkin.
Otherwise I'd turn into a pumpkin.
Yeah, that's right.
Don't worry about Abby. Hey, this Super League story, moving on, is quite remarkable. We spoke yesterday to Rob Harris from AP, and the backlash and the feedback from this concept of all the biggest clubs in Europe coming together and playing in this league that didn't have promotion or relegation and just was this seemingly this massive big money grab. It's quite staggering, the response in the last 24 hours. In fact, even way to the last hour or so. This from the Liverpool players who are supposed to be a part of it. "We don't like it. This is an official statement, and we don't want it to happen. This is our collective position. Our commitment to this football club and its supporters is absolute and unconditional." That's just come through in the last couple of minutes. "Barcelona plan on leaving the Super League," says sources out of the UK. Andrea Agnelli has reportedly resigned as president of Juventus, one of the teams supposed to be part of it. Edward Woodward. Isn't he an actor?
Yeah.
Who's not this? Not the same guy. Well, no, standing down as chairman of Manchester United. What else have we got? There's Arsenal are leaving the Super League. Manchester United are pulling out of the Super League. Manchester City are pulling out of the Super League. Atletico Madrid are reportedly pulling out too. Chelsea are pulling out too. So all of a sudden, the backlash has been so strong, the condemnation so damning of these clubs and what this is, it's fallen over before it's even started.
Tottenham will stay in it because it's the only chance they'd be guaranteed of playing European football. They might win it every year. They might be the only team left.
Well, they might be winners and losers. They might finish on top and bottom at the same time.
It is quite stunning because when we were talking about it yesterday, I made the comment that I was really quite surprised how advanced it all seemed to be.
Yep.
And it felt like it was, you wouldn't be able to undo it. It was so far advanced. So for this to take place, because you often see it in the AFL where the AFL will fly a kite and get a feeling, a vibe of what the community thinks of the idea. And if
temperature of the room.
That's right. And if it's, you get the sense early, we're never really going to do it. We're just, just throwing an idea out there.
18 metre goal square.
Yeah, that's right. Or something would just leak and it's just an idea to sort of get a feeling. But this was much more advanced than that. And I'm quite surprised that they wouldn't have a better feel for their own supporters as to what they'd want.
But I don't think it was. I think that therein lies the problem.
Yeah, that's right.
It was never about the supporters. It was about the headquarters and the officialdom wanting more cash.
But it has
not really paying any attention to the supporters.
Yes, but it has been spoken about for a long time, this sort of thing. A long time.
Have they?
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe not in this particular structure, but there's been a lot of talk around a Super League. And again, a lot of it around, those teams. Let's just use the English Premier League as an example. Those teams in the bottom, let's say the bottom 10, that really are never going to compete for the title, never really, especially the bottom 5 or 6, they're never really going to even contemplate playing European football. But a lot of it's just surviving every year. So to some, they say, well, they're just a waste of time. Let's have it'd be like in the AFL here. We were talking about this last week about two divisions. That it's just about the best playing the best on a regular basis around Europe. I can understand why they would think about this being a good idea.
Well, the concept of the competition is basically what the AFL is.
Yeah, yeah.
The best of the best, supposedly, with no promotion, no relegation. It's just a fight.
Yeah.
To the end.
The imbalance is that there are so many teams in Victoria.
Yes.
But even in the case of this example of, six teams in the UK, there was only going to be, a handful in a couple of other teams. The UK was going to probably be the nation that had more teams than anybody else. But, yeah.
Yeah, the lack of awareness of the public sentiment towards...
And that's dangerous.
They all lose enormous face in it. Whatever happens, say it goes to the shires and it's disbanded in the next day or week or whatever it might be, a month, who knows. The face that they lose, all of these clubs lose within football, but within their own supporter base, is a really, really interesting phase of their evolution and the opportunity in front of them. They need to... I don't know how they win their fans back. It's going to be a huge task.
No, well, that's exactly right. And I think that's why we're seeing some people sort of fall on their sword already. But there's a really good article in The Age. I think it's written by John Perrick. I stand to be corrected on that. Talking about what John Elliott proposed back in the 1980s about essentially setting up a Super League.
John Perrick.
And this is before the AFL... sort of came about, and in a lot of ways, I think that what John Elliott did accelerated the expansion of the then VFL. We saw it in the NRL with Super League in the sort of the mid to late 90s.
Yes.
We saw how that went. Obviously, the Kerry Packer thing with cricket, which ultimately became quite successful. And I think the other part about cricket too, the success around the Big Bash, that there was a lot of cynicism around that when that was first. Sort of put forward as an idea, going with the city-based options rather than the traditional way. But you'd have to concede those that were cynical about that, that that's been a success.
Well, no doubt. No doubt. I think that the cricket one's interesting because, I mean, the basis of that was to make it a more professional environment and to pay the players accordingly. The football, the world football situation is very different to that. They're getting paid squillions, massive overs. There's no need for them to be getting any more money. And it wasn't actually about them getting more money. It was about the clubs. All these rich billionaires becoming even more billionaire-ish, which doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
Well, one of the things that they said is one of the key reasons for doing it is that they feel that young people have become disenfranchised with the sport, that they're not as interested as the older people. Now, I don't know whether that's right or wrong, but it was, that was one of the key things that they thought that this is why it needed to be done.
I think the young people have been engaged significantly in the last 48 hours.
Yeah.
Because the backlash would suggest that they're listening, they're watching, and they're certainly involved. But it's quite remarkable the demise of this competition, this amazing competition, which, as you rightly said yesterday, seemingly was really advanced in the last 24 hours. Kenny Dalglish, who's the director of Liverpool, has wants to make sure that his club is out. So all these power brokers and legends of the game have come out in such condemnation of it that it, well, certainly from an English football perspective, it doesn't look like it can survive.
No, and there's stories of playing groups going to chairmans or chief executives and saying, how dare you keep us out of this? You know, we had no idea and we've been blindsided by it.
And the other 14 clubs are up in arms.
Yeah, and the irony is that as the games over the weekend were played, the people that made the decisions have just gone to ground and they've just exposed the managers and the star players to comment on these things when they've really got no detail about it. And there's none that have come out and said, yeah, you know what? This is a great idea. I get to play European football every week. It's going to be fantastic. No one said it.
It is bizarre. It is absolutely bizarre. But we'll see what unfolds. We'll try and touch base with someone this morning and see how it is going. But at this stage, from what we know, as I mentioned before, Liverpool players have released a statement saying they want out. Kenny Dalglish, one of their legends and director, says he wants out. Barcelona plan on leaving, according to all the sources. The president of Juventus has reportedly resigned. The chairman of Manchester United has resigned. Who else? Man City's pulled out, accordingly to the reports. Manchester United are pulling out. Arsenal are pulling out. Atletico Madrid are pulling out. And Chelsea seemingly are pulling out of this ill-fated Super League 24 hours after it started.
As Feathers from Sale says, let's not try and break something that isn't broken. The EPL up and down areas are make it. Didn't really read that particularly well, but I hope you got the drift.
Is this English day, isn't it?
The last thing I'll say in this, if it happened, let's just play a game for a moment. So, say it happened.
Right.
Do you think it would be successful?
No, I think it would have a novelty factor for a bit, and then it would, because the, as Feathers was saying, because the promotion relegation system in football, European football, is so ingrained, possibly the foundation of why so many people are engaged at every level, I don't think it would. I think you'd get a novelty factor really to watch them play. But I think the whole ecosystem of European football is relying upon promotion, relegation. Everyone's alive. Everyone can achieve greatness if you know you work hard and things happen in your favour, all that sort of stuff. This would take all that away. So I think that's where it dies.
See, I agree with you to a point. I actually think it would work. I think it would thrive. But I think what would happen is that the English Premier League would really struggle. In a similar, not
well,
the same.
Well, it wouldn't be the Premier League. It would be just the other league.
Well, no, but say that the Premier League was still able to... that Chelsea and Man United, they all still played in the Premier League.
Oh, yes, you're still on there. So, okay, yeah.
But I still think that it would suffer, not to the same way as, say, what's happened with the SANFL and the Waffle when the AFL started, because that clearly, with the Crows and Port Adelaide coming in and West Coast, had a major, major impact on their domestic competitions.
Yep.
But I still think it would have worked.
Scotty McLaughlin's one of those. Team Kemp Penske IndyCar driver had his first race on the weekend, survived, which is a very good start, I reckon, considering what happened in the first lap. Scotty, good morning.
Hey, guys, that segment's probably one of your worst, but...
Hey, we do that every day. We have great fun with the birthday bulletin. Thank you very much. Just because it's not your birthday, mate, don't get jealous.
Just keeping you honest. Come on.
Did you watch Who's the Boss as a young fella?
No, I have no idea what that is.
You're a generation behind. You got to check it out. YouTube it. Google it. Do what you have to do. Hey, what was it like on the weekend, mate? How'd you go? Because I must admit, it was a bit hairy that first lap. It could have gone pear-shaped real quick.
Yeah, no, it was pretty hairy. Certainly, dodged my first wreck. I looked back at the onboard footage and I sort of passed the spinning car at 160 mile an hour, you know, so that's like 280 clicks. So it was pretty crazy, but sort of once I got into a bit of a rhythm, we were pretty good. But we're probably just a little bit conservative on the strategy front this weekend. From a team's perspective, I think they just wanted me to get one under my belt. So we probably threw away a little bit of a top 10 there, but I think we started pretty strong, which is a good thing.
I was thinking about that crash that fortunately you avoided. With the experience that you've had in supercars, did that help you avoid that?
No, honestly, I think it was more us than class, Adam. I think, I was in the right place at the right time. All I saw ahead of me, because you can really see nothing behind the cars because you're sitting so low. And, I could see that there was some dust and I went right. And then when I got beside the car that was in front of me, that's when I saw the car that was spinning. And I literally saw a gap down the right, and it was just pure instinct, like, to just keep throttle into it. If I had backed off, I probably would have got run over, you know. So it was just sort of pure instinct that, keep my foot into it. There's a gap there, take it. Even if you have to drop a couple of wheels in the grass, like, it was probably safer than checking up in front of the whole field. And, looking back at it now, especially on board, it was definitely the right decision.
So two things from that. Firstly, does that give you greater confidence now that something like that happens? You're in a very unfamiliar car, in a very unfamiliar environment, that you go, gee, if I can negotiate that sort of thing, that's a really big tick?
No, I think it's just, like I said, I was just in the right place, right time. Like, that stuff, you can get caught out. The guy right behind me literally got absolutely smacked, So it's really right place, right time. But, I think getting through that race and be able to get one under my belt, something was on my side that day to make sure that happened. So, I was pretty happy with that.
Yeah, so then the second part of it is to get through that, to finish the race, you get back home or wherever you're staying and you sort of reflect on your first race. What was the overriding emotion?
It's happened, it's getting started. Like, this is actually happening, the pinch yourself moment that, I've talked to you blokes for a few years now about, coming across here. I've talked to many people about, the aspirations to race in America. And, when you're sort of standing, when the invocation's going on and the anthem and stuff like that, and then the jets fly over and all that sort of stuff, it's like far out, actually here. So, it was a pretty cool realization, pretty exciting. So the only thing that really sucked was just mum and dad weren't there, and my sister and a few friends. But apart from that, it was pretty awesome.
Time for us to get into the Velado Steakhouse Whitey World Famous 5 Question Quiz. So what you need to do right now is give us a call. 1-300-652-927. We are going to be giving away lunch or dinner for two, valued at $210 if you don't mind. Velado's, Melbourne's own world-renowned steakhouse. They've been a family business, for nigh on 60 years. 60 years, the team at Velado's. And we have been there. We've experienced this excellence. And it is worthwhile getting your chompers into some of the magnificent fare they're offering there at Velado's Steakhouse. Take him on. 1-300-652-927. I'm not sure of the quality of the quiz today.
I'm a bit nervous about the quiz today. There's a couple of difficult questions.
Oh, no.
So we haven't got a lot of time.
Are you sure you want to do that?
Oh, well, we're doing it.
Righto, over to you, Whitey. Don't bugger it up.
All right, let's go. 1-300-652-927 is the phone number this morning, as it is every morning. Leroy from Tasmania is going to open the batting for us today. Leroy, good morning.
Thanks, Mike, and I'm going to be stoic opening the batting today.
Yeah, I hope so. Well, interestingly, the first question is a cricket question since you're opening the batting.
Of course it is.
Exactly right. Always got to have a cricket question. Which cricketer made 192 in the Sheffield Shield final last weekend, Leroy?
Oh, don't you just love to say his name? Manish Labuschagne.
Very good.
Strong start.
Very good.
Confident.
Question number two. Jeremy Cameron is set to make his debut this weekend, finally, for the Cats. We saw him in the pre-season. We're going to see him in the season proper for the first time on the weekend. What number will he be wearing as a Cat?
Oh, I have no idea, but Cats have 9 lives, so I'll say number 12.
Not number 12. Who does wear number 12 for Geelong?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that.
Good question. That's not the quiz question, but it's a good question. 1-300-652-927. Mark from Mooney Ponds has given us a call. Good morning, Mark.
Morning, Jen.
Jeremy. What number? It's a famous number at Geelong. What number is it?
I'll go to the 5.
Very good.
Nice work.
Very good, Mark. Nice work. Excellent work. Question number 3. Now listen very carefully. He used to be the boyfriend of Miley Cyrus. He won the Masked Singer.
Oh. Well, now that could have gone anywhere. That we could have been here for 45 minutes with that question.
It's a bit scary. You knew that before.
What's the rest of the question?
He's a pop person, and he also competed in the Australian Swimming Championships over the weekend.
There's the sporting link. There's the kicker.
Very good, Mark. Congratulations. You're up to question number 4.
Cooper Stevens is number 12 for the Cats too. He's yet to make his AFL debut.
Was Trent West number 12, the ruckman for the Cats?
I reckon he might have been.
Back in the day when I actually had to know what numbers they all were.
We know the body language and the shape and the face these days. That's right. You don't need to know the numbers.
Exactly right. Okay, question number 4, Mark, for you is a famous voice.
There's a guy who runs the leadership group. I will get rid of him.
Who is that?
Strong stuff as always.
Would you give me a sport, at least?
No, AFL.
Aussie rules, yeah.
AFL. A former multiple premiership player from a while ago now. Very passionate about the club he supports. Let's hear it again. I'll give you another go.
There's a guy who runs the leadership group. I will get rid of him.
Oh, I'm going nowhere with this one.
No, Mark, I gave you plenty of time.
The fact that he got Cody Simpson...
Well, that's why I gave him a bit more time.
Yeah, it's a good effort.
But when we've got a full board of calls, you can't give him too long. Mark, thanks for your call. Scooter from Melton. Good morning, Scooter.
Hello.
Scooter, who is this?
There's a guy who runs the leadership group. I will get rid of him.
Who's that?
Sorry, I didn't hear it. Oh, hello.
We'll play it again.
Are you with us,
Scooter? There's a guy who runs the leadership group. I will get rid of him.
He runs the British what?
No, he's not British. No, I can just shut you down straight away. He's from Bayside here in Melbourne. Is this famous voice? Bad luck, Scooter. Let's go to Ollie from Frankston. Good morning, Ollie.
Morning, boys.
Who's that voice?
Sounds like Mark McClure.
Very good.
The one and only.
Very good.
Who was he talking about there last night?
I don't actually know. Whoever it was, he'd be a bit flat this morning.
I've got a feeling. I don't know. I wasn't watching. I was otherwise engaged, as you know. I've got a feeling it may have been something to do with the Carlton Footy Club. He does like to give him a clip on the way through when things aren't going well there, man, the Sellers.
Yes. All right. Ollie, this is the final question. And a significant question, because a significant thing happened over the weekend.
Well, this is for the $210 voucher.
This is for the $210 voucher of ours. Who was, I want a name, the first Australian woman to clear 2 metres in the high jump at the Australian Track and Field Championships? First Australian woman to clear 2 metres.
I heard this one. Bunny Hopper.
No, Ollie, not correct. Let's go to Luke on the road. Luke, good morning.
Not correct. Good morning.
Okay, Luke, who was the first Australian woman, this is for the prize, to clear 2 metres in the high jump at the Australian Track and Field Championships? No one's ever done it until this particular woman did.
Look, on the tip, is it?
High jump. No clues, guys, yet?
Not yet. The full board calls.
Do we really?
Yep, we do. Absolutely we do. Gone. Gone.
I don't even know what to say.
Damien from Kingupna. Good morning, Damien.
Sorry, Whitey, I don't know.
Damien.
Same,
all right.
Same surname as one of the great fast bowlers of Australia.
He liked to wear zinc.
80s.
Liked to wear zinc.
Is he 90s or 80s? 80s, late 80s, not early 90s.
80s and 90s. No, yeah. Definitely 90s.
Late 80s too, wasn't he?
And he has a son that plays very well. He's two. Not the bowler, but the batsman's still around. Paul from Dandenong. Good morning, Paul.
Oh, yeah.
Good morning.
Who is this person?
Nana Muscuri.
Well, you know what? As silly as that was, the initials are spot on.
Yeah, well, they are. They are.
Spot on. Even the muck.
They are. All right, let's go to Spiro from Burwood. Good morning, Spiro.
Good morning. The initials don't help. I was going to say Inverarity.
No, but
Alison Inverarity.
She would have loved to have jumped 2 metres back in the day.
Yes, that's
Alison.
Right.
And been out of the game for a little while now.
Let's get points for that. James from Cheltenham. Good morning, James.
G'day. Is it Nicola McDermott?
Bingo!
It is.
You betcha it is.
Well done, James. Congratulations.
Scotty Jemison, Melbourne City captain, who, of course, is captain of the number one team in the A-League at the moment. Top of the table. Well, there's a fair bit of good happening in the A-League too, just by the way. Saturday night, there's lots of goodness at Amy Park. 7 times there was goodness in your performance against Melbourne Victory. Now, you come off the first game where you beat them 6-0.
Yeah.
What are you thinking when you get to the game on Saturday night? Are you thinking just one will do us, or are you thinking that you got 5 or 6 in you?
No, the whole message. I think the whole message throughout the week and then at the day of the game that, you know, the first result was a one-off. And that was the true belief that, you know, that wouldn't happen again. And quite frankly, it was, you know, a very far-fetched result. And then, yeah, I guess myself and PK with the ones who were spreading that message looked like fools because we went one better with 7. But look, it was a great result. I'm not downplaying that. Did we feel sorry for Victory, you know, and the players and their staff and their fans? Of course we did. You know, it's one of them results where, you know, the first one was amazing and truly special. And then, you know, this one was great too, but you're seeing a wounded animal there across from you. And I know there's a real divide in regards to rivalry with City and Victory, but, you know, that one was for the fans, both for the fans, honestly. But, yeah, the second one for us was that we felt a little bit sorry for them.
Well, it was a 6-0 win early in March. So it was a thrashing just a month ago as well. You did speak, Scotty, about going into that game and not wanting to have any complacency, which I guess is potentially a challenging thing given the situation of both clubs and that result. What were the sort of things that you spoke about it to the players leading into that match to make sure there wasn't that sense of complacency?
Well, even before, Cheryl, I mean, we've had a great run of results in terms of winning. And the whole message there was, you know, stay hungry because, you know, some people can get, tired of winning. And that sounds a little bit weird in the sense of, you know, you're in a competitor, you're winning for points. But some people just take it for granted and they think they can turn up and win every game. So that's been the message throughout the whole, I guess, good run is stay hungry. Winning isn't easy, but it's very enjoyable, and that was the case on Saturday leading up to the game. Is, you know, the derby games are completely different. You know, form goes out the window, and when it comes to results like 6-0 prior, they don't happen. Also, that didn't happen either. It was 7, so...
That's exactly right.
It was a completely weird night, but I think our players fully understand that, you know, the only player who's in front of you, we're playing a club and a team that's probably at rock bottom. So, you know, we spoke about it after the game, straight after the game, addressed it, but we also wanted to make it known to our fans that, you know, that was a special result for them, and we don't underestimate that. You know, our fans have always been the butt of the Victory fans' jokes. So, you know, it's for them. It's for them to turn up on a Monday morning to their Victory fans and Sprinkle a little bit of City love.
It's European Super League, Scotty, if we just change back a little bit. Now, there's some unbelievable stories coming out today, how many teams are pulling out. The 12 super clubs are now a bit down to about four, seemingly, although there's only one official, that's Manchester City at this stage. What's your take on that and what it means and why this has got to this point and how bad it is for the game? Because unless, of course, you think it's good, because seemingly everyone thinks it's a horrible idea.
No. Truly unbelievable, guys. I guess I've always thought the money in football would surpass, and something like this may happen, but I didn't think it would happen as soon as it has. And you know, you talk about those American billionaires who have really put in money, and then you look back on their decisions that they've made, and it all makes sense now that they've just tried to use it as a vehicle to you know, really rip the heart out of football and just bring money in. And for me, seeing the backlash and waking up this morning and yesterday morning, you know, it's been unbelievable. But I think the whole big scheme of things, and I think, you know, to a lesser extent, you're talking about here in Australia with clubs and fans, is the power that fans have is unbelievable. I mean, if you looked at the images of this morning of Chelsea, yesterday of Liverpool, and then the decisions this morning of these clubs pulling out, it's down to the fans. And I think it's important for every fan here in Australia, whether it's AFL, whether it's netball, whether it's basketball, whether it's the A-League. The fans have the biggest say, whether they think they do or they don't, they do. And for them to get these clubs out of the Super League is unbelievable, because, you know, English football for its existence has always been about, I guess, those small clubs and the competing of trying to make it into the Champions League or whatever. So for this to happen is unbelievable. And I think, these American owners will find out the tough way when it comes to fans getting back in, that, they're going to cop a lot of barrage and criticism, and rightly so, because it was greed. It was pure for their own net worth, and it was terrible.
Well, what will it be like? How do you think the impact will be with the fans? Do you think that people will just be able to go, okay, you know, we've moved on from that now, and their passion will be just the same? Or do you think it's going to have a bigger dent than that?
No, I think this will run through. I think you'll find, you know, the English fans are a different breed when it comes to football. And that's not me trying to make it, something it's not. I've lived over there. I've got family over there. I've played over there. And there's one thing for sure, that these people will die for their football clubs. And when you have an American person who doesn't set foot in the stadium, trying to take him into a European Super League and then, really just let the Premier League die away, it'll be known. And when these crowds come back, these gentlemen who own these clubs of Arsenal, Tottenham, City, United, not so much City because they pulled out this morning, but Liverpool, especially Liverpool. Mm-hmm. I mean, Liverpool are a club that built on tradition of hard work and a real family club. I can't really see John Henry, coming out of this at all. And I wouldn't be surprised if there is a push to get the owners out. Whether that happens, I don't know. But there's definitely going to be a case of these owners are never going to be forgiven. And that's something that, will definitely, I think, change the course of their ownership.
It'd be a nice day to be at footy training, I reckon. One of those good days, Sherelle. Todd Goldstein may or may not be going there today. I'm not quite sure if it's his day off or not for the Kangaroos, but he's with us. Good morning, Todd.
Thank you. Half the day is my day off, so I'm just doing the extras.
Doing the extras. What's an extras day look like for you?
No, I'll probably head in after this and just go do some recovery and bits and pieces. We've got a six-day break and travel to Perth, so... Mm. You got to make sure you're ticking off all the recovery stuff that you can do because, it's a short week.
If it was an eight-day break and you're staying in Melbourne, what would your day off look like? Would you still go in, or would you go and shoot some hoops or do some life admin roles at home? What would you do?
Yeah, for me, it's a day where I try and spend time with the family and also try and catch up on some uni as well. So normally, we've got a pool at where I'm living at the moment, so I'll probably jump in that normally as a bit of recovery, but generally it's a day at home.
So 6 days, Perth, recovery is important. How did you pull up from the weekend at the Cattery?
Yeah, not too bad. Obviously, only, 3 days post now, so you still got a little bit of that residual soreness, but I think overall, no injuries and that, so we're right to go for Saturday night.
We've talked about this a bit, Whitey, in the last couple of years, in the Inner Sanctum with our guests, with our team members, about what day of the week, how many days post-game do you actually start to feel normal again? You're 3 days post now. When do you feel normal and ready to go again?
Probably the next game day is pretty much. I mean, yeah, by our main skills, so we'll probably do main skills tomorrow. So by that stage, you sort of want to be feeling fairly good, and that's your day to really get a lot of work done. The first sort of three quarters of the week is all about recovery and trying to get your body moving again, and then the main skills day is the general day where you want to try and be able to get, you know, a solid at least 5 or 6 Ks done.
I think I asked Taylor Adams this question last week. What's recovery? Because you hear a lot of people say recovery. And I think we just think, oh, well, they go and have a swim. And that might be it. Or a walk. What is recovery for you to give yourself the best chance to bounce back?
Yeah, so I try and use as many modalities as I can. So at the club, we've got the ice bars, which you tend to spend about 10-15 minutes in at a time. We've got the hot spas and also a sauna as well, which can get the blood going, so you do a bit of hot cold in there. I also try and do lots of stretching and use a foam roller and just pretty much anything you can to get yourself feeling good, because there's many different ways. Even just simply going for a walk can just get the body going again. So yeah, if you become too stationary and just sit on the couch all day, that can actually do more damage than it can doing exercise.
Yeah, what about the trip to Perth? You obviously mentioning that it's a bit of a short week with only the 6 days. What impact does it have to get on the plane and have to sit there for that period of time? Does that change your approach as well because of that?
I think it changes the way we do our week. I think, you know, you probably have to really pull back the load in your weights and your training just because you do have to factor in the short break and the flight. But it's really just important to make sure that when you're getting to Perth that you're not just going and sitting on your bed and watching TV. You got to make sure you're getting out for a walk. I think we'll do a train session over there and things like that just to make sure you're getting going. And the hardest thing about Perth is just making sure your body clock's on the right time, because the sleep the night before a game is very important and can be pretty tough when you might wake up at 4 or 5 a.m. on game day. So it becomes a really long day when it's a 6, 7 o'clock game.
So do you try and scale it back through the week and the building up, like half an hour a night for 4 or 5 nights to try and get on schedule when you get to Perth to be on the clock?
I've got 4 kids, so generally you can find a way to sleep all right. So I might wake up a little bit earlier, but yeah, generally I try and just make the most of being able to sleep.
Fair point. Fair point.
We've actually had a lot of questions from our listeners who are very excited about you coming in, and so we're going to try and get to as many of them as we can throughout the course of the next little period. But just your general thoughts on the last couple of weeks post the Good Friday disaster, because I don't think it's fair to say that's what it was. But you bounced back pretty well. You led Adelaide at three-quarter time, and then even against the Cats on the weekend, you showed some really good signs. How important has that been to, I guess, test the new culture of North Melbourne, how you would respond from that Bulldogs game?
Yeah, I think it was very, very easy to throw the baby out with the bathwater after that Bulldogs game. And I think for us, we're very understanding of where we are. We're on a journey about trying to get better each week, and there's going to be dips. I think we all want that lineal improvement, and that's, in reality of a young group, that's not what happens. There's lots of ups and downs, and as long as you're slowly getting better. So I think the last couple of weeks has sort of showed that we are improving. It's given the coaches some vision to work with, going, this is what we're doing really well. So you can see that general improvement. You know, this week, going down in the Cattery, I think we had 13 players under 34 games. I think it was 15 under 50 games. So it was a very, very young side going to one of the more intimidating venues that you can play at. Yeah. So for them to come out, play well, you know, there was times where Geelong threw a number of shots at us, and we were able to sort of absorb them and still keep coming and staying with them. So I think, you know, I've had some pretty horrible games down in Geelong. So, you know, I think overall we can see that the improvement's there. We just need to do it for longer and more of it. And that's the key to any group. And I think we are getting there. And we've, you know, Geelong was as close to a four-quarter game as we've played. So we've just got to keep building on that and understanding that we are still learning. You know, we've got, 12 new coaches or something. So we're still learning an entire new game plan along with trying to get these young guys in.
So a two-part question. After the Bulldogs game, as a senior player who's gone through so many different sort of generations at the Kangaroos, what were you thinking at that point? Were you worried or were you fairly philosophical about it?
No, I think I look back to 2010 when Brad Scott took over, and we had some pretty bad beatings to the hands of Geelong and Collingwood in that year and those years after that. So I've been through that. I understand that, you know, with such young guys, and you can sort of see the way that Tom Powell's coming on and a Will Phillips is coming on. We were playing them, especially in that Bulldog game, very similar to the way that we played and the Adelaide game as well. We played Jack Zeeble and Ben Cunnington in 2010. So you can see the synergy there. And I think overall you understand that, yes, there is going to be some letdowns and we would like them to be as few as possible. But, you know, you can see how good these kids could be if they keep working. So it's all about just trying to keep their heads up and trying to make them focus on the areas that they can actually change rather than the stuff they can't control.
Yeah, so the second part of that question is then seeing the response, again, as a senior player, how much more confidence does it give you that, geez, we are on the right track here based on what you've seen and the response you've seen?
Yeah, I don't think that faltered after that game. I think I've trained with these kids now for 3 or 4 months. You understand how good they could be. And I think that's the exciting thing. I think I said it last time I was in, it's the most exciting young group that I've had coming through. So we just got to make sure that we're teaching the right habits and making sure we're not skipping the steps. We've got to make sure that they understand what it takes to become good players and that they've got potential, but they're not there yet. So, you know, all I can do is try and keep their energy up, try and keep their excitement and get them wanting to get better, because that's the key to it.
So take us into three-quarter time against the Cats. You were definitely within touching distance. You'd played really well and were putting some great things out there. What was the talk like? How was everyone feeling? Was there a sense of we can really push them here, or were you hanging on? What were the young players in particular kind of thinking at that moment?
I think we're all, and the message from the coaches was pretty clear that we were doing so many things right that we just needed to tidy up a few areas in terms of how we went inside 50 and how we moved the ball. And if we got that right, that we were right in the game. And I think we all felt that way. Obviously, it didn't quite work out the way we were hoping to. But, you know, I think we kept fighting. That was a thing. I think we kicked the last couple of goals as well, which, you know, I think we kicked 2-1 from only 4 inside 50. So we did keep fighting, even though Geelong were starting to get on top. But I think that was the most pleasing thing.
Are you learning anything about the game at the moment with this young group and also the way the game's been played? Are you having to adjust your game?
Yeah, I think every player's had to adjust just with the speed of game. And it's obviously very, very different to what we've been playing. I think the way teams are able to move the ball is a lot quicker, and you've got to be more switched on, and you can't just, there's probably those times where you can't just walk. If you walk, you get caught out pretty fast. So just those little areas where you need to keep making sure you're working and understanding when you are on the ground that you can't switch off at any moment. That's the key at the moment.
Well, I want to know if Isaac Smith can twirl his pen on his thumb, because he didn't go to Wesley College in Prahran. He was a long way from there, but these days he's down the highway as part of the Geelong Football Club and an Inner Sanctum member, the captain of the Inner Sanctum, with us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Isaac.
Morning, Half. No, they didn't teach us that in country New South Wales. Oh. No twirling of pens down there.
Yeah, no,
there.
I didn't learn it at Rochie High either. I had to go to Wesley to learn that.
What did you learn at country New South Wales high schools, Isaac?
Not a hell of a lot, mate. I wasn't a big fan of school. Dad was a school principal, so I certainly got told what I should be doing. But, no, learned a lot of street smarts up there.
So your dad was your school principal?
Yeah, he was.
Oh, that's awkward.
Did you ever get called into the principal's office?
Oh, I did. And when I used to get sent there, he'd ask what I was doing there, and I'd say, I've just come to get some tuck shop money. I'd get home that evening, and he'd just give me a wry smile. He never brought it home, which was nice.
Nice work. Geez, the kids would have been concerned about coming back to your place, wouldn't they?
No, he was very good, very personable.
Right.
He had the loud voice. Oh, he still has the loud voice.
So he still has the loud, deep voice.
A real presence around the schoolyard, I would imagine.
He does.
Now, straight at you, Isaac, what's happening with Danger's ankle? We need to know. Come on.
Mate, I've got no idea. I'm not privy to those conversations now. If it was a Hawthorn player last year, I could have told you, but I'm not privy to those conversations since moving a new club, but I have been told that he's an incredible healer and he has healed very quickly over the years. So, fingers crossed, we're a better side when he's in it, and it was nice to have him out there for the first part of the game on the weekend.
What's he like to play with? I know you haven't done it a lot, but going from being an opponent of his to actually being a player, have you changed your view on him at all as a player?
I don't know if I changed my view in the sense that I always thought he was a superstar of the competition and very impressive, but I guess probably seeing it up live every day at training and in games, just how powerful he is through the stoppage, and he can change the whole momentum of a contest, which is pretty impressive. And when you're an outside player, it's nice to see it, because more often than not that he wins it, he can give it to me.
Well, that's helpful.
Yeah, that's always nice. Isaac, you mentioned you're not maybe privy to some of the conversations you perhaps used to be at Hawthorn. What's that like for you, being not necessarily in that kind of circle?
It's very nice, Cheryl.
Is it?
It's actually, it's been really nice in the sense that it's been a little bit of a reset where you just go in, you do your job, you worry about what you've got to do, and you get it out. So although I help where I can, it's sort of nice being able to take a step back and see it from a different view, I guess, where normally you're probably fully immersed and fully involved in that kind of stuff. You can sort of sit back and see it from a different angle, and you know, you probably don't have the emotional responses that you do when you're involved.
Yeah, and because it's an interesting one. We look at leadership across clubs and captains and people in leadership groups, and there is a lot of responsibility that sits on your shoulders with that, isn't it? You know, there's a lot that we expect of those athletes above just what they're doing out there on the field.
Yeah, I think there is. I think probably the beauty about Geelong is that we have been called the nursing home or the retirement village, so there's a lot of in football term old wise heads down there, so it's been really nice to be able to sort of sit back, bounce ideas off guys, see how different guys approach different situations. So yeah, it's been a really nice learning curve.
You're averaging about 23, 24 possessions a game at the moment. I mean, you're getting a fair bit of the footy. You've integrated
as well, half. Imagine if I went into the midfield.
Well, that's what I'm about to say. I mean, you're playing a different role. It's seemingly worked out pretty well so far. Is it what you thought it might be?
Yeah, I had some really good conversations with Chris Scott before I got to the club, and we talked about probably my role and how I could help the team, and we talked about that, and it's been really nice to probably play a bit of a different role and just freshen the mind up and take the shackles off a little bit in that sense. So yeah, it's been fun. Hopefully we can start to play a bit better footy, and even though I got a bit on the weekend, I didn't execute overly well, and we probably didn't as a team either, so we need to clean that up a little bit.
I was going to ask you that. You're 3-2. You're sitting inside the eight at the moment. But how are you playing? How is it looking from your eye and from the coach's eye at the moment, the Cats?
Yeah, we're certainly not playing as well as we want to. But we're 3-2 and head of the ledger. And I think from my experience over my short time in the game, that all you got to do is once you get to about round 8, 9 or 10, you've got to be ahead of the ledger, which then gives you an opportunity to launch into the second half of the year and put yourself in a really good position to play finals and play deep in finals. So we do have an older group, and maybe it's just taking us a couple of weeks to get out of the blocks, but we'll certainly have to be pretty physical and pretty energetic this weekend coming up against West Coast. They're probably one of the two or three form teams in the competition at the moment.
Are you walking to work?
Yeah. Where are you?
I've just dropped the little one off to daycare.
Oh, very good. Is it day off today, sorry, or are you at the club?
Day off. It's a day off every day down here, mate. It's beautiful.
So you're living down there, Isaac, and you've probably spoken to the boys about this, but are you based down there now?
Yeah, based down there, 2 minutes from the club, so certainly don't waste any time commuting each day, which has been really lovely, even though my wife doesn't like me at home as much as I am at the moment.
Well, the reason I was going to ask that is that obviously there's going to be a lot of media attention in the next few days around whether Patrick plays, but But also Jeremy Cameron finally playing. And you, along with Sean and yourself, have come to the club. And it's been a late start for him. How's he feeling ahead of his first game?
Yeah, I think it was probably a bit difficult for him, I guess, being the prize recruit. Sean and I certainly weren't that. Jeremy was that. So, you know, there is a lot of perceived pressure that obviously Jeremy's probably put on his shoulders, but also the fans, and Geelong's a small place, and when you go around the town, you know, everyone recognises you. So I know he's probably been feeling that pressure, but the club have been really good in tempering his expectations and just making sure that his body's right before he gets out there. So he's pretty excited. I think in the pre-season game, he showed he can do a fair bit. So I think all the boys are looking forward to getting him out there.
So do you think he'll make you play quicker? And you know I want you to play quicker. But
shut up about him for 3 years, Isaac.
But with Tom and Jeremy inside 50, whatever the configuration will be, do you think it will at least give you more confidence to move the ball quicker, knowing that those guys are inside 50?
Yeah, well, I guess they're two of the premier power forwards in the comp, so we should have a fair bit of confidence in kicking it to him. I think the other one is Asava Radigalia. He's got through two VFL games, and he was the dominant player on the ground on the weekend as well. So I'm not sure, as I said before, I'm not privy to any conversations, but I feel like he'll come back into the side at some stage as well. And with the three of them, it'll certainly give us some tall targets to hit. Whether if we play quicker or not, I don't know. I've always tried to play my footy pretty quick, Whitey. So, yeah, we'll just wait and see.
Isaac, we've been talking a little bit today and across the last couple of days about mobile phones in change rooms, and they should be locked away, and the integrity of the sport. But what I want to know from you, who misses their phone the most when they have to put it in that little box at the Cats?
It's certainly not me. I hate my phone, to be honest.
So you like putting it away and you're having it locked away for a while?
It doesn't worry me putting it away at all. I think Tom Hawkins is a big fan of his phone.
Is he?
Yeah, we were having a bit of a conversation in the rooms about it the other day, so I think he might struggle, and Joel doesn't mind an Instagram, so I reckon he might struggle as well.
They get a bit twitchy.
Sweet redemption. The Brisbane Lions are queens of the jungle. They are the champions of AFLW for the first time.
Third time's a charm for the Brisbane Lions on the weekend. 18-point winners over the Adelaide Crows in the AFLW Grand Final. Craig Stasovic was announced as Coach of the Year by his peers through the week building up. And fair enough too, because his girls did justice to him on the weekend with that premiership glory for the Brisbane Lions. He joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Stas.
G'day, Huff.
Great to have you with us. Have you come down yet, or are you still in celebration mode?
The girls are still in celebration, I'm sure. Yeah. A bit hard for an old bloke like me, half, to keep up. But, they're having a good crack at it.
Have you had a chance to watch it and reflect, or have you sort of moved on pretty quick, just enjoyed the moment?
No, I have had a chance to watch the game back. There's some things we're really pleased with, obviously, but I'm sort of, you know, half casting a critical eye across it as well, with a few things that we can get better at. So, it's like reviewing a normal game of footy, half, you know what it's like.
Yeah, but I've never coached the premiership at this level, Stas. So I would imagine you just let this one ride, wouldn't you?
I'm trying to enjoy it. It's actually much more enjoyable to watch than your regular home and away game, that's for sure.
No doubt. And at halftime, there was less than a goal in it. But then you jumped ahead in that third quarter. What was it about that third quarter that let you get on top?
I think it was just, you wait for opportunities in games, Sherelle, where you think you might have the opposition on the ropes a little bit, and then you've got to actually capitalise. That's sort of what it felt like. We had quite a bit of, they had the opposition under a fair bit of pressure. So to actually capitalise and, offensively cash in, that was probably the most pleasing thing. But even that was hard work for us at that part of the game. But I was happy with Arnell's soccer in the goal square, and I didn't think we'd be getting another one from Dawes 30 seconds later, so that was really nice.
It was a nice little period of time. The Crows have got some huge talent within their team. Erin Phillips is one that I'm always really interested in and watching to see how she goes. She, through the home and away season, didn't have less than, well, actually 14 possessions, but certainly not less than 10 in that grand final. She only had 8. Was there time put into her? How much do you work on those individuals and trying to shut down their influence in those big games?
Yeah, all of those key players take up a fair bit of your time, no doubt about that. And the last time Erin played us, she had 21 and kicked 4. So yeah. she absolutely dominated that game. Mm. Probably the best I've seen her play, to be honest. So we weren't, we're bracing for, you know, Erin getting herself up for the big occasion, which she normally does. But we're, you know, super lucky to have, you know, great pressure all over the ground, but a really nice matchup with Bree Conan doing a great job on her as well. So Bree's had a good 2 weeks. She had Chloe Malloy in the prelim, and now Erin Phillips in the granny. So she's had a ripping final series.
You've got the amazing record, Craig, of being a coach, winning coach, premiership coach of the AFLW, and a premiership player for Collingwood as an AFL player, which is, no one's done that. Can you compare the two? What do you get a kick out of most?
It's a tough one, because you're sharing with your teammates when you're talking, you're playing. But this one's a lot of hard work. This is 5 years worth of toil. So it's just as satisfying, I think. But just having that conversation with the players last night, actually, when we were just sort of sitting around afterwards, that, you know, that they'll have that really nice bond with each other for the rest of their playing days and the rest of their life, and they'll get together for reunions and all those sorts of things. So, it's something that's sort of just starting to sink in with them as well.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.